spiritual master, they've commented on it to make it more clearer, to make it more readily understandable, without in any way detracting from the meaning, presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is, with a clear commentary, so that those items which we may struggle with become easy to understand and very easily to comprehend. So anyway, this prayer, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pracharini, because you were preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya Deva. This is the thing, that Lord Krishna, he teaches Bhagavad Gita and he teaches you surrender to me. But unfortunately we don't do a very good job. So Lord Chaitanya comes to teach us how to be a devotee. Actually, by his own example, the Lord himself comes as Bhakta Avatar. In this incarnation, he never claims to be God. Rather, he teaches us how to be the devotee of the Lord. And in fact, if people would accuse him of being God, he would become very upset and he would cover his ears and go, Vishnu, Vishnu, Vishnu! He wouldn't hear such words, which is a very interesting contrast with the so-called swamis and yogis and gurus and bogies and gyanis and whatever they may be, who are very eager to have themselves represented as being God. But Lord Chaitanya, he taught our business is not to take on the role of being God. Rather, our business is simply to be servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord, not to think ourselves God and not to accept that, because we're already intoxicated enough in this material world with false ideas about who and what we are, why add on to the intoxication by falsely assuming that, oh, now I'm God, now I'm really someone? No, actually now we are really nothing in this material. Anyway, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pracharini, Nirvisesha, Sunyavadi, Pastyatya Deshatarini. You're very kindly delivering the message of Lord Chaitanya Dev. Preaching the message, pracharine, yes, preaching. This is the movement, this preaching movement is there. Actually, this is a preaching movement to educate people about the science of Krishna and deliver everyone all over the world, especially in the Western countries, from the clutches of impersonalism and voidism. Why? Because Krishna is the Supreme Person. If Krishna is not a person, how you became a person? Krishna is the original person. This is confirmed by Lord Brahma, who is the original creature, person, within this universe. And he declares, yes, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Krishna is the supreme controller and his eternal form, his personal form, is eternal and full of bliss and full of knowledge. So in this way, the mission of the spiritual master is declared in these two verses, that actually his mission is to wipe out these impersonalist and mayavadi, nirvisesha sunyavadi, impersonal and voidist conceptions about what is God, what is the absolute truth, and present very clearly Krishna's statement that param brahma param dharma pavitram brahmam bhava. Krishna said, Arjuna declares this of Krishna. He says, you yourself are the supreme Brahman, the supreme person, the supreme shelter of all the universe, the supreme pure. This is declared by all the Shastras, and now you yourself, my dear Krishna, you are declaring this to me. So Bhagavad Gita is giving this message, and so the point is that Srila Prabhupada is not changing this message even one iota, simply presenting it as it is. Therefore, Prabhupada's qualification is extraordinarily special because he's trying to teach what Krishna says, not trying to cheat and say, well, this is what I say. No, this is what Krishna says. We stand on what Krishna says because that is authority. And that's the authority of the Krishna consciousness. So anyway, after that preamble, let's chant these these prayers to Srila Prabhupada and the invocatory prayers to this Bhagavad Gita. So we'll start off with these two. Hare Krishna Prabhu, Hare Gokula Nandadas, Hare Krishna. Well done. Hare Krishna. Ready? Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Pasyata Deshatarine Om Ajnana Timurandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshuram Miritam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitantam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namo Nama Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Ganadha Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama Krishna. So we've been looking not at the introduction, but at page, let's have a look, 46. We were looking at this verse and purport. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Yes, please. That would be nice. Thank you. It would be better than my husband in the back room. Thank you. Srimati Tulsi Maharani, okay. So does anyone remember who was here last week, what we discussed last week? Anyone remember any of the topics?
We discussed about things about the yoga, karma yoga, the differences between the yogas.
Okay.
Very briefly, that's all.
Okay. Good, good. Anything else that anyone remember? Dean,
we touched on transcendental again as well.
Yes.
The meaning of that.
Do you remember the meaning of transcendental?
Original or characteristic spiritual form.
Okay.
Of all nature.
Very good, yes. Very good. And particularly beyond the influence of this material nature. So obviously to understand what that means, one has to understand what is the material nature and what has to therefore understand what is the spiritual nature to understand what transcendental actually means. So therefore Bhagavad Gita teaches us both items. It teaches us what is this prakriti, this is material nature. It teaches us what is time, teaches us what karma is, the activity which keeps us bound up within the material world. And it teaches us what the living entity, the jiva, is, who is making this body tick. Yes. And it teaches us, Krishna teaches us who he is, what is God, what is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and how he's completely unaffected by this material creation. And the jiva, he is simultaneously affected and unaffected by this material nature. Can anyone explain how the jiva, soul, is both unaffected and affected by this material nature, simultaneously? Krishna Guru.
Okay, so it's unaffected because it cannot be harmed or it cannot be changed by material nature, but it's affected because it resides in the body which is controlled by material nature.
Okay, good. Would you like to add a little bit more to that? It's very good. Mukesh Prabhu, would you like to add something to that?
Please, that it's a marginal energy.
Yeah.
The jiva.
Like, yeah.
It can decide if it takes shelter of the material nature, then it will be bound and affected by its modes of nature and associated energies. And then it can also be associated with the superior nature.
Okay.
Obviously, once that jiva is in its constitutional position, i.e. a servant of the Lord, it's in its constitutional position, and then actually Krishna says that, you know,
okay, that's good. Okay, would anybody like to go a little further than that to explain how the soul is simultaneously affected and simultaneously unaffected by this material world? Chananda Prabhu.
When soul is in contact when the soul is in contact with devotional service, is linked with Krishna, you know, he's not affected, you know. But when he's in contact with material nature and material energy, you know, then he's affected, you know.
Okay, yes, good, good. Anything else? Ashok Prabhu, would you like to add anything to that?
Well, the same as what Krishna Prabhu says, that it's, in a way, it's locked into this material body, which is controlled by material nature.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's not, it can't be harmed, or it can't be, like, broken into pieces, or it can't be damaged in any way.
Yes.
So it remains pure all the time.
Yes. Okay, good. Anybody else like to add anything to that? Malini, what did you? Would you like to?
No, I agree with you and Krishna.
Okay. Anybody else got anything to add to further clarify the nature of the soul here?
It's eternal, there's no beginning, there's no end, it's always been everlasting, it's always been living since.
Yes, yes. Krishna says, for the soul there is never birth nor death. He's unborn, ever existing and undying and primeval. He isn't slain when the body is slain. So there's no question of the soul coming to harm in that sense. The soul is eternal. He's immutable. He doesn't change. But then there's another aspect to this individual soul, because we understood from that explanation from the Vedas about the size of the spirit soul. How big we said the spirit soul is inside the... what is the size of that jiva soul?
1,000.
1,000. Add another zero. 1/10,000th part of the point of a hair. That is the size of the jiva. So that's the size of the jiva in the body. So in this sense, we can understand that the soul is, he's a transcendental particle. He's not going to be destroyed in any way. So in what sense can we understand that this spirit soul is affected by the material world. How does the soul then become affected and start thinking that I'm a man or a woman or a child or a cat or a dog or a budgie or a cockroach or a fish or a demigod or whatever it may be?
Because the spirit soul, when it comes into contact with material nature, it is inflicted by material nature in the false perception, you know, it starts assuming itself to be the body. Soul is not the body, but it starts assuming itself to be the body, you know, instead of being a spirit soul, thinks himself that he is this body, you know, started acting in a bodily conception of life, you know. That's why it's getting implicated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise soul has nothing to do with the body, because body is different and soul is different, you know.
Yes,
but
the body.
Identify with the body, you know, it gets implicated, you know, and then start affecting him.
Yeah, so the body is completely temporary. It's born to die. It's full of so many problems. You open it up, and you think, quick, stick it back together again. Too many problems in there. Gareth, probably you had.
I just looked at the index for soul, and it said the same thing. So then it said, go to condition soul. And then it says, going to chapter 15, text 10, I'll look at the quote course, and it says, consciousness is originally pure like water, but if we mix water with a certain colour, it changes. Simply consciousness is pure, for the spirit soul is pure.
This is very nice. This is what I was looking for. Thank you very much. This is the point. Krishna is expressing in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 that spirit soul pervades the entire body. Now the soul, he's just a tiny little particle. So how then do we understand that the soul pervades the entire body? Is by our
consciousness,
yes. We're conscious to the tips of our fingers. Just like the sun is in one place, but here we see the sun is pervading the entire universe, right here in this room. Here's the sun, the sun's rays are in here. But if the sun itself comes into the room, we've all got a big problem. Yes? Instant nuclear fission. But the sun, by its energy, is spread everywhere. Similarly, the soul is a little tiny particle within the body. And by our consciousness, our energy is spread throughout this body to the tips of our fingers and our toes. So the soul himself is unaffected by matter, but his consciousness is affected, because when we come in contact with matter, our consciousness becomes polluted. And under that polluted concept of life, we identify with this temporary material body as being part of this material world, in particular that this body is everything. There's nothing more than this. And when one is in ignorance, then just like the animals, the cats and the dogs, because they're complete, or the other animals, creatures, because they're totally identified with the body, their only concept of existence is struggle for maintaining, struggle for survival to how to keep that body alive. Simply how to eat, so the body is maintained, how to sleep, get some rest after a hard day's trying to maintain the body, how to mate, and how to defend the body. So eating, sleeping, mating and defending, these are the gross activities of someone who's grossly and ignorant. So the living entity can take any variety of body, the birds, the beasts, the aquatics, the insects, the trees, and the human beings, or the devas, so many different forms the living entity can take. But in each case, when we get inside the body, everyone thinks, hello, this is me. But this is the mistake. So because we are very tiny, try to understand this one point, that the soul is superior to matter. So by nature we shouldn't be overwhelmed by matter, but because we're very tiny, we have very tiny potency, we become overwhelmed by this material nature. And we become influenced by the material nature. Although we're superior, we come under the influence and under the control of this material nature. Particularly, we get the body, everyone's under the influence of the senses. Can anyone stop breathing and say, I'm not going to be influenced by this body and I'm just going to stop breathing? How long can you do it for? But every one of us is forced. The body is forced to act because it's working under the control of the material nature. Similarly, the forces of the tongue. The tongue wants to eat so many things. The belly makes demands. The mind makes demands. A must of this. Otherwise, why have we got all these big, big houses? To satisfy our sense of what we want to do and what we want to be in this material world. I want to be in a big mansion, or I want to be in a big car, or I want to be a little car, or I just want to walk on foot, or whatever it may be. But we've all got the desires of the mind. I want to dress like this. I want to do my hairstyle like this. We've got so many different ideas, so many different varieties, because everyone's an individual person. Yes? We're not clones of each other. So in this way, we express the desires through this material world. But this is not our natural condition. Our natural condition is the spirit souls to develop our spiritual body in relationship with Krishna, with the Supreme Person. Here we have these temporary bodies. We have our relations with our mothers and fathers and husbands and wives and children and parents and cats and dogs and everything. And all the different varieties of relatives, the whole spectrum. Everyone knows what I mean. You go to a wedding, and if you don't have at least 600 people in your wedding, then you're not really up to the mark, isn't it? So many family members, so many relatives of the body. But these are not our real relatives. The real relative is Krishna. So, anyway, the principle is that we become affected by material nature, and it's the subtle body, it's the subtle consciousness which becomes affected. But just like water, when it falls on the ground, then it becomes muddy, and then it's not something that you can use for cleaning yourself very nicely, or you're not something you can use for drinking very nicely or cooking with very nicely. But if you filter it, then it returns to its natural, normal condition. So similarly, our consciousness, when it becomes purified, it returns to its natural, normal condition, which is completely pure, like the soul. It's the pure energy of the soul, as opposed to the distorted, disrupted, polluted energy of the soul. Gareth, you had a question for me, or comment.
So, this conversation is terrible, the soul has become like...
No, our consciousness has become muddy. The soul hasn't become like mud. The soul's energy, just like the sun is pure, but you take the sun's rays and it comes through some colored glass and it changes the quality of the color of the light that comes through it, yeah?
Okay.
So by coming in contact with this material nature, the quality of our consciousness has changed. It's become materially affected. So now we think, I'm this body. And we struggle with the six senses and the mind, including the mind, to use our energy to resolve our problems of life, which have no end. Because of ignorance that our real problem is fourfold. We've come into this material world and now we've got birth, old age, disease and death. These are the four problems. We solve these problems, the rest is automatically taken care of. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, well, I still think my name is Gary Fowles, that I live in a single place. I don't feel like, you know, I feel constantly in touch with Krishna. I feel when I leave this place, I'll know what I'm going to be like, and then I'm going to be doing all this stuff again, you know what I mean?
Yes. You fight it? Okay, good question. Would anybody like to answer this question? How you fight against this conception of life? Which is constantly battling to overpower us.
Constant devotee association.
Yes. There's one thing which we can do, which changes the way we look at things. Let me give you an example. Hare Krishna Bhupendra. Supposing a child, young child, hasn't been to school yet, hasn't figured out what's going on so much, and sees that there's this sun in the sky. What does he make of it? What is this sun floating in the sky? What is it? It's some bright ball glowing in the sky. No idea what it is. But when you hear from the authority, you can understand, oh, it's actually a very big planet. It's floating in the sky many, many millions of miles away. And it's illuminating the universe by its unlimited source of energy. And you start to get an idea of what the sun actually is by hearing. Just by using the ears, when we hear from the authority, we start to see things actually in perspective. So the process of educating ourselves in spiritual life is to hear from Shastra, to hear from the Shastra, from Sadhu, Shastra and Guru, so that we can actually put this world into perspective and see what is going on. Gradually as we hear and as we apply what we hear to our everyday lives, then it gradually makes more and more for a clearer perspective about what's actually going on in this world. So the process is the same. It's the educational process. We have to become educated in the principles and practices of spiritual life, and then gradually when we're walking on the street, we'll know, I'm nothing to do with this material body. I'm Krishna's eternal servant. And the less they'll be thinking that I'm this ever-changing Gareth who's going through the processes of gradual deterioration of the material body, getting old and getting diseased and getting dead. Does that make some sense? And as we try to apply and practice it, then it becomes clear that the devotees, they chant and dance and they remember to chant Krishna's name first, because we're told it's what we're supposed to do, but after that because we have some realization. I'm Krishna's eternal servant. Hari Bol, Hare Krishna. And we actually become eager to chant Krishna's name and eager to take Krishna's prasadam, eager to meet with the devotees and eager to serve the devotees, eager to hear about Krishna and understand how wonderful and glorious Krishna actually is. But we have to develop first of all the taste for doing it, because at the present moment we may be experiencing to different degrees that we don't have that much taste for chanting Krishna's name. We don't have very much taste for understanding I'm not the body. But when we actually have some taste and some understanding I'm not the body, then the next thing is, well, now if I'm not the body, if I can understand that and appreciate it and be convinced of it, then if I'm not the body, what am I? And what am I supposed to do if I'm not the body? This is spiritual activity. So this science has to be understood. Not that we'll understand everything all in one go, but gradually we have to understand. It will take some time. If you want to become a university student, it doesn't happen as soon as you go to primary school. It may take a little working at and some developments, and you have to go through different stages to get to that point. But nevertheless, it will come in due course. Mataji, you had a question.
Yeah. You're talking about the soul at the moment. How come we can't see the soul?
Yes. How come we can't see the soul? Would anyone like to answer this question? Why can't we see the soul?
Because currently our material senses are blunt. We don't have the vision which is necessary to see the soul. If we have the spiritual vision, then maybe we could. But because we've only got material vision, there's lots of time.
Yes, we have to see in principle by hearing. Just like as we can understand, that's very good. We can understand simply that all these bodies are living, all of us here are living, only because there's the presence of the soul. And as we become gradually clearer in our spiritual understanding, we understand when we're talking to each and every one of us, actually these people we're talking to are not their bodies, they're actually the spirit souls. We see through the light of knowledge. we actually see what we're doing. Just as, let me give you a simple example. Mataji, you make chapatis at home?
Yeah.
Okay. You know how to do it.
Yes.
You have that knowledge, so you can just, do you need to do a recipe every time?
No.
You just take the flour and the water and mix it and do it and put it on the fire and it's done. You have that knowledge by which you can see that flour, okay, this is going to be chapatis. Yes? By your knowledge, you can see how that flour is actually chapatis. That's the actual product. Similarly, when someone becomes clear in their consciousness, they become very clear and straightforward that actually all these living entities we're seeing here are not their bodies. They're actually spirit soul. But it requires some practical application of transcendental knowledge. How did you learn? You learned from your mother or your mother-in-law? Yes. So the principle is that we get educated. At first we don't know. We see that our mothers, they're doing these things. And I don't know how she does it, but she makes these wonderful chapatis. Yeah. And they taste so good. But she knows how she's doing it. But she's so expert that she probably does it most of the time without even thinking how she's doing it. But that knowledge means it's automatically done. So similarly, when we have transcendental knowledge, it's automatically understood that everyone is actually a spirit soul. Everyone's internally part and parcel of Krishna. But it requires the development of knowledge. At first, it may be a little bit of a struggle. We may have to do some practicing and trying to put the principles into practice. We may get this dough ball. I know that I haven't developed my chapati making knowledge much beyond the art of making crispy biscuits. Yeah. So it needs some further work on that. So if our knowledge means we're still seeing people as these material bodies, we have some more work to do to develop our understanding. And then as we see these living entities, Bhagavad Gita explains, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavihastini Suniceva Svapakecha Pandita Samadarshina. That the learned sage sees by virtue of true knowledge that all these creatures, the pandit, the Brahmin, the cow, the elephant, the dog and the dog eater, they're all the same. Samadarshina. Someone who is pandita, someone who's actually learned the science, they see everyone is equal, that this insect he's crawling around on the floor, he's a spirit soul. Not only he's a spirit soul, but he, like everyone else, has Krishna in his heart, like all of us have Krishna in our heart. And when that knowledge is developed, then automatically we're very respectful and we won't want to harm even an ant, because we can see Krishna has given this living entity that body. What right have I got to interfere with his lifestyle? Yeah. I have no right. Krishna has given him his facilities. And we won't want to do any harm to anyone. Just like if someone is coming to cut the throat of someone else, you won't want that to happen because you know how bad it would feel if someone came to cut your throat. Yes? So if we have that knowledge, then we can understand how to relate to others also. So when someone's spiritually developed, he sees that actually this living entity is a spirit soul. But actually, he's in the same position as all the creatures in this material world, from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, that everyone's struggling hard with the conception, I am this one. I'm suffering in the material world because I'm thinking, I am this material body. That's why we're taking birth after birth. Does that answer your question somewhat? Okay, just trying to put it in practical terms.
Yeah.
Good.
Totally.
Krishna.
Just to add to that, like what Sanjay was saying, like your senses are limited. We're not even able to see with our eyes all these other living beings that exist, like small living entities. We can't see them with our own eyes. And anything then we create is then created with them limited senses as well. So then even that item is like imperfect. So then it's like how to recognize or see the soul when it's even smaller than these living entities that we can't see with our eyes.
Yeah, it's a fact. We have very imperfect senses. We have basically four defects. which make it very difficult to perceive what's really going on in this world. What are the four defects that every conditioned soul has in this world?
Tendency to make mistakes.
Okay, one, we make mistakes, yes. We must make mistakes.
Tendency to cheat
others, yes. We have this unfortunate cheating propensity.
Ignorance.
Particularly, which means we tend to be in illusion of some sort, yeah. We're all under illusion. For a start, we're all under illusion that I'm the body, and our parents, when we're born, they encourage that conception that you're the body. Ah, ga ga, goo goo goo, aren't you sweet? Yes, you're just this body, you're so nice. And we become put even deeper under illusion, and we think, this is the life. Yeah, I'm enjoying like anything here. So, making mistakes, being illusioned, imperfect senses, we can't actually perceive, and the tendency to cheat. Is that the four? We got it right?
Yeah.
So these four defects make it very difficult. Are you okay, Tasha? You got a bit of a nose, please? Do you want to lie down in the other room, or do you lie on the chairs here if you feel comfortable to do that, and put your head back? And that way it will help to stop it. Yeah. Help it clutter a bit. Might be easier for you. Okay, here's one thing. Can we see everything that's going on here? I had a practical experience today. Hare Krishna, Gareth. Thank you for coming. I was cleaning out one of the cupboards at home, and you know what happens every now and again? You get these little bugs that come and live in the cupboards, the weevil things, they come. And you start looking through the bags of flour and grains and things that are there, and you see that, oh, some bugs have got inside. Now those are bugs that we can see. But there are many bugs which are much, much tinier than that, which you can't even see with the naked eye. So what to speak of seeing the jiva? If you see one hair lying on the floor of your room, you may have to look closely to see that there's a hair lying on the floor of your room, yeah? Now what if it's just the tip of that hair on the floor of your room? How will you spot that? And what if something's only 1/10,000th part in size of the tip of one of those hairs? How will you spot that? Exactly. This is the problem. With these blunt eyes, we're unable to perceive the soul, but by some intelligence, we can perceive the presence of the soul. Just like you see a dead body, you know the person's gone. You see a living body, well, I can talk to this person because there's someone there. So by intelligence, we can perceive the presence of the soul. Just as we can perceive that to the tips of our fingers we have consciousness, we can feel, because the soul's energy is spread throughout the body. So we have to hear and use our intelligence to understand the science, and then it becomes very clear. Is that alright?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Ashok Prabhu.
Out of my intelligence, false ego and soulism itself, which accepts the body as of itself, like when we accept the body as our soul, like we think, this
okay.
is me.
Yes.
Is it the mind that accepts it? Is it the false ego? Is it the intelligence? Or is it the soul itself?
Okay, anyone like to answer this question?
I think it's the mind, by the way.
Yeah, I would say it's the
intelligence.
It's not control of the senses.
Okay,
yes.
Anybody else? Yeah, you're good,
yeah.
Good.
It controls the senses and the
okay.
desire things and see things and want things. And
okay, interesting question.
I think it's mind because when Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the mind, you know, can take you, mind is the best friend and mind is the best enemy as well, you know. So if your mind is in the proper direction, you know, it can take the proper, it can give you proper guidance, take a proper way, you know. But if it's linked to the other way around, it will degrade you as well, you know.
Okay.
So mind is the chief factor, you know.
Okay, so we've got some votes for the mind. And what else have we got votes for? Anybody else got an alternative? Sanjay, were you saying the intelligence?
Yeah, we said intelligence because I was reading an old version of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, and I saw the four horses being drawn and the soul in the background as a passenger.
Okay.
And they discovered in the purport that the intelligence is the charioteer is trying to control the reins of the horses, the nose, the eyes, the tongue, the mind, was it? The ears. And
sense of touch.
Yeah, yeah. Sense of touch. So I'd say the intelligence is in charge.
It's how you use it as well with your moral duties. Right?
It's
how you use it with your moral duties and ethics as well. Because if you use your intelligence wrongly, it can go wrong as well. So it's, a constant battle of balancing and all of that.
Okay. All right, so we have a couple of votes for the intelligence. False ego. Mukesh Puru says the false ego. Why the false ego? What do we mean when we say the false ego?
Look at the hierarchy of the gross body and then the hierarchy of the subtle body.
Yeah.
The subtle body is much more subtle than the others, and it's close to the soul. So its contact is initially with the soul. Then it comes down, the other layers come down, then it approaches the gross body and all these. So its first contact, I think, because its first contact is with the soul, it's, and then it goes down.
Okay, alright, good. Any other advance on this topic?
Okay, I can't hear the question.
Okay, would you like to repeat the question, please, Ashok?
Yeah. My question was that out of these, out of the following, mind, intelligence, false ego, and the soul itself, which one is it that accepts the material body as itself? So when we say, I am this body, which one is it that accepts the body?
Okay. Anybody got any other points to add to this interesting question?
Yes, the soul accepts the body,
Okay.
Because then the other thing just follows, it's that according to your karma, soul accepts the body that's given to him, and that's the decision is taken by higher authority, not by the soul itself,
Okay.
And then the subtle body follows with the soul as well,
Okay. All right. Good. Yes, getting some interesting answers on this. This is excellent. Krishna, what?
I'm not putting my hand up.
You're not putting your hand up? Okay. Anybody else like to add to this discussion? Matsuji, would you like to add anything to this? Okay. Sorry?
I would think it's maybe I would have always thought that the mind and intelligence are separate. So.
They are two separate elements, yes. They are. Intelligence is definitely higher than the soul. All right, well let's try and put it into perspective from how the Shastras explain it to us. That the living entity, he's got two types of bodies. We've got the gross body, which we can see, and we've got the subtle body, which we don't see, but we know that it's working, because when I talk to you, I can see that you're thinking about what I'm saying. So there's something going on in there that I can't see, but I can perceive that there's some sign of life there. Actually, the living entity, he's living in his subtle body. Just as at night, what does death mean? It means leaving this gross body and going off in our subtler state. And actually, surprise, surprise, we do this every night. We go off in our dreams, in our subtle bodies, and those bodies are perfectly real, but they're very subtle forms. And one day we're doing like this, and next night we're doing like that, and so many things. In our subtle bodies, we're acting in so many ways. But then because of attachment, we come back into this body because our time for this gross body is not finished. But the time will come when we'll be liberated from this gross body. But what we won't be liberated from is our subtle body. The subtle body means it's made of three elements. It's made of the mind, And then subtly than that is the intelligence, which is meant to control the mind. And of course, if the intelligence is bewildered, then the mind doesn't really have any control of what it should be doing and what it should not be doing. And subtler than that is the false ego. So Krishna says these five gross elements, earth, you see that how they gradually become from gross to subtle. Earth is pretty gross, solid stuff. And then the next one, bhumi, apo, water. This is more liquid, it's more subtle than the earth. Earth, water,
fire.
Fire is more subtle still. It's hard to actually, the water's form is continually changing shape. But the fire, it's much harder to define. It's something you can't actually even touch. Can you? It's very difficult. And then subtler than the fire is the air. Because we can feel the air moving. Is it not? We can feel the air being blown. Sometimes you feel walking past a hot house, you feel the bricks radiating heat through the air. So, and subtler than the air is the sky. Because the air is here, but the sky is out there. We are led to believe that it's all a vacuum. But the sky just doesn't mix with it. It's a separate element. Yeah? So these five grosser elements are what comprise the gross body. And then the three subtler elements, the mind, and then the intelligence, and the false ego, comprise the psychological or the subtle body. So the false ego, ego means self. So the false ego means the false impression I have of what I am, that I'm this material body. The rabbit is thinking, I'm a rabbit. The cockroach is thinking, I'm a cockroach, and I therefore do what cockroaches do. My dharma is to run around passing stool and urine and contaminating everything and going into all the dirty places. And the dharma of the fish is to go swimming all day and eating other fish and being eaten by other fish. Yeah. So, but in every body, everyone thinks this is me. Just like Gareth, he was saying, well, I think I'm Gareth. And we may think, yeah, I'm Ashok, I'm Malini, Chubangananda, Jayananda, Dashal, everyone. Everybody thinks this is me. But what's actually happening is it begins with the covering. The coating over the soul is the subtle body. The first coating. The second coating is the gross body, the one that we can see and identify with. But the first coating over the soul is his subtle body, and that contains his sense of who he thinks he is, that false ego. And that's reinforced by material intelligence, which concludes that as I'm this material body, I should work for the satisfaction of this material body. And the mind cooperates very nicely by making so many demands. Yes, I want this, I want that, and the others, and my senses want this and that and the other. So just work and use all your best intelligence for fulfilling the demands of the mind, which is the focal point of all the senses of the gross body. So it actually starts with the false conception of who we are. So when we're actually talking about liberation, everyone's going to be liberated from the gross body at the time of death, right? We're all going to be kicked out of this gross body at the time of death. But what we actually have to get liberated from is the subtle body. This is what we have to get liberated. Because at the time of death, we travel in our subtle body and we get, depending on what state our subtle body is in, our mentality, our consciousness, our desires, our thinking, our sense of who we are and what we are and what we want to be, that sense determines what body we're put into in the next life. And that subtle body, he may take one or two detours, because it's the subtle body who goes to Yamaraj and gets punished for his sinful activities. So you've seen the picture of Ajamil being dragged out of his gross body. He's in his subtle body. And the Yamadutas come in their subtle forms and they put ropes around the living being and they drag him out in his subtle form and they take him off for an interview with Yamaraj to get sorted for everything we've done. So it's the subtle body that's going there, and it's the subtle body, the sense of the mind, the intelligence and the false ego, the subtle body who gets all the pains and suffering and torment that one has to undergo, just as in this life. It's actually our subtle body that experiences so much torment and so much pain. I wanted so much to have this person in my life. I wanted so much to have this job. I wanted so much to be married to this person, or I lost this in my life. And actually this is the mind, this is the subtle body. We're experiencing this trauma actually in our subtle body. It's not the body that's suffering in this way. The body is suffering from cuts and bruises and bumps and physical assaults, but someone comes and speaks some insulting words to you, it's the subtle body, the sense of who I am, it's offended. How dare you say this of me, because I'm not like that. It's actually the subtle body that's being grossly defamed and insulted and chastised and abused, and that's where we're experiencing the pain. Because if somebody says some harsh words to you, that's not hurting your gross body. If they throw a rock at your head, that will hurt. But the subtle body is experiencing the pain of mental anguish. So actually in our subtle body we're experiencing much more than we normally notice. We tend to think this is me. But it's because I'm identified in a whole by this false ego as this whole thing, the gross body, that somebody says, you're a thief, you're a rascal, you took far more expenses than you're allowed to take as an MP, and then, it's so much trauma. The distress is not of the body, the distress is of the mind and the intelligence. I shouldn't have acted in that way, and so many things. But it's due to identification with the body. Because the soul has nothing to do with all this. We actually, as spirit souls, don't require this gross or subtle material body. What we do require is to develop our own eternal, blissful, fully conscious, fully knowledgeable, fully cognizant spiritual bodies in our relationship with Krishna. This is actually the necessity of the soul. And this is developed, this consciousness, the original consciousness of the soul, that I'm Krishna's eternal servant, is renovated by the principles and the practices of devotional service to Krishna. Gradually our original consciousness becomes awakened, and the artificial consciousness of being identified with the body through that false ego, that's where it starts. And then reinforced with the intelligence, yes, this is what I should be doing. And with the mind, I want this, I want that. And with the senses of the gross body. So all these things work together. But when we see with some knowledge what's actually going on, things gradually, by practical application, start to become clear. And we start to get practical experience of how we're different from the body. Does this answer your question somewhat? Okay. So good. So the principle of how then to purify these three elements, the subtle body, means that with the mind, Krishna is explaining how to do it in Bhagavad Gita. That our minds are busy dwelling on sense objects, and the result is we become attached, lust develops, we become angry because of frustration. And we become, our memory becomes bewildered, and we fall down into the material pool of existence. So this is the process by which we remain entangled in the material world. But Krishna is explaining this is how you get and remain entangled, but he explains this is the process by which you get the mind liberated from the material world. Manmana bhava madbhakta madhyaji mam namaskar mam evaisisi satyam te pratijane priyosime. He says, use the mind, particularly his comments are, engage the mind in always thinking of me. So the mind has to learn to become trained to be in contact with Krishna. When the mind is in contact with the material sense objects, when we're dwelling on how to enjoy the material sense objects, then we remain in polluted consciousness. We remain trapped in the material concept of life. But when we start to purify our minds, when our minds come in contact with the Supreme Pure, which is Krishna, when we actually start thinking and meditating on the sound of Krishna's name, remembering Krishna's pastimes, his qualities, his adventures, his words in Bhagavad Gita, his instructions, actually the mind becomes purified by thinking of Krishna. So the mind is the first part. Always think of Krishna. This is Krishna's instruction. Become my devotee, Bhavamat Bhakta, Madhyaji, worship me, Mam Namaskaru, offer your obeisances to me. This is the first part. So, become my devotee means use the intelligence. Devotee is not a fool. A devotee is the most intelligent person because he understands I'm Krishna's servant. Why should I carry on rotting in this material world, being victimized by my mind? No, intelligence means we control the mind. We engage the mind in some better activity. Intelligence means that I think, how can I serve Krishna best? How can I actually serve Krishna in the best way so that he will be pleased with me? This is purifying the intelligence. The intelligence also then has a good engagement. It has a transcendental engagement. It's coming in contact with Krishna. It's becoming purified by thinking, how can I nicely execute my devotional service? How can I please my spiritual master? How can I follow his directions and please Krishna? And the false ego, very simply, instead of thinking, I am this body, we have to learn to understand by hearing that I'm not the body, but I'm eternal servant of Krishna. We have to identify ourselves as I'm Krishna's eternal devotee. I don't belong in this rotten material world. And in this way, the subtle body becomes liberated from the influence of matter by being absorbed in Krishna. This is the process. Mataji.
I understand the concept of the intelligence controlling the mind.
Okay.
But the false ego, the intelligence then, wouldn't that fall into the same category of the intelligence controlling the false ego? Because your intelligence tells you anyway that you're not the body, and your intelligence is controlling the mind. It is controlling your mind constantly the entire day, or your entire life, you are in control.
The intelligence is very close to the soul. Yes, we have to use our intelligence.
Sorry, and then it brings me to the next question of somebody who is extremely spiritual. The soul is comprised of the mind, intelligence and ego, false ego. How would somebody extremely spiritual, Prabhupada, for example, how would he say his soul, what is his soul then comprised of?
What is his soul?
What is the makeup then of his soul? Is it then mind, intelligence and ego as well? Or
His mind and his intelligence, his sense of who he is, are completely purified. As far as his false ego, that is completely purified because there's no false. He doesn't make the mistake of thinking he's the material body. He knows, in reality, that he's the eternal servant of Krishna. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santa sadeva hridayeshu vilokayanti. Because his vision is purified with love of Krishna. He's seeing Krishna face to face and speaking with him. He's seeing Krishna at every moment. So he doesn't make the mistake of thinking I'm this material body. And his intelligence is always engaged in the service of Krishna. How Krishna will be pleased, how I can try to present Krishna's message, how I can try to serve these living entities by giving them some understanding of Krishna. And his mind is always absorbed in thought of Krishna. So Prabhupada's position, the position of the pure devotee, Krishna explains, he confirms it in Bhagavad Gita. The thoughts, what's going on in the mind, he says, the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are surrendered to me. their intelligence is simply how to please Krishna. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always conversing with one another. They engage the senses practically, conversing with the other devotees, talking about Krishna and enlightening one another about Krishna. So their physical body is purified, and their gross body is purified, and their subtle body is purified fully by being 100% engaged in the service of Krishna without any tinge of, well, I'll do this for Krishna, but there's a few things I want to do for me. So, no, only everything is done for Krishna. But the false ego means that I'm still thinking I'm separate from Krishna, I'm different in quality from Krishna. That I can still enjoy here in this material world separate from Krishna. But when someone knows, just like when the hand is fully rectified of its diseased condition, if the hand is in a diseased condition, it won't be able to work properly. If your hand is horribly diseased, then you can't pick up the food and put it in your mouth. But when it becomes in its proper, wholesome condition, immediately it responds, yes, hand, you come here, and you take this rasgulla and pop it in the mouth. Immediately the hand is fully cooperative. But in the disease condition, we don't want to cooperate with Krishna. We think, well, why should I cooperate with Krishna? I want to enjoy independently. But the devotee who knows he's eternally part and parcel of Krishna, he has no other function except to serve the whole Supreme Whole, serve Krishna. So this is the devotee's condition, his false sense of being independent from Krishna, separate from Krishna, he's not bewildered by this false sense of being material and being someone who is, because the false ego means, try to understand what this principle of false ego means. The false ego means that myself is not Krishna's servant, that myself is an independent enjoyer. When I have this idea that I'm an independent enjoyer from Krishna, this means that I'm getting my karma and I'm in ignorance. But when I know I'm Krishna's eternal servant, I shall only act for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna is saying, yagya tat karma nonyatra loko yam karma bandhana. The work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise one's work binds one to this material nature. As long as I'm acting for myself being the enjoyer, my body, my mind, my family, my friends, my relatives, my community, my nation, my world, planet, my universe, call it what you will, universal love, or whatever it may be, as long as I'm thinking I'm the enjoyer, this is false ego.
And that is the intelligence that I'm thinking of, isn't it?
That intelligence is required. That intelligence means I get intelligence, I get educated. So actual education means we have to educate the subtle body to be fully engaged in Krishna's service. We talk about yoga. Sometimes people talk about yoga in terms of keeping the body fit. It's not just about keeping the gross body fit. Yoga means to control the mind, to get the spiritual, the subtle body fit. If the subtle body is fit and properly healthy, then it will naturally be serving Krishna. Have I missed something?
No, I think my intelligence is not distinguishing between false ego. I understand what you're saying about false ego. I just feel that it's all part of the intelligence.
The intelligence has to be there, but the intelligence has to be given to the mind, that in my mind I'm very clear of who I am and what I am. I'm Krishna's eternal servant. That intelligence has to be clear, because even subtler than the intelligence is this, like just like Gareth was explaining, this sense of who I am and what I am. That he's going out of here and he's thinking, well, I'm Gareth. He's still got this idea that I'm the material body. And we all have these ideas. And therefore we struggle and suffer with it. But by purification, we have to apply the science of Krishna, because it's a subtle science. And the science is very good in theory. You can have a lot of theory, just like you can have, for example, very nice theory of how to build a computer. But then somebody says, okay, here's the workshop, there are all the bits, go for it. Yeah. Unless you've got the practical experience how to do it, where do you begin? Yeah? We actually have to practically apply the principles of Krishna consciousness, and then we get experience. Just like if I know in theory that if I put the food, if my hand puts the food into the mouth and go in the tummy, into the stomach, the theory is that the hand will experience the benefit. Yeah? But the practical is to do it. Or take another example. A bee licking the bottle of honey. You see, this nice honey is inside there. But if I want to taste the honey, I have to go inside. And then I can taste the honey. Otherwise, simply licking the bottle isn't going to be sufficient. So devotional service means actually entering into the mood of a devotee. Therefore Krishna says, always think of me and become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage to me. In this way, gradually you will come to me. Certainly you will come to me, because you are my very dear friend. But the problem is, we're not always very convinced that Krishna is God, and we're not always very convinced that I'm not the body, and we're not always very convinced that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. Because all the propaganda of this vast, influential material world is telling me, nah. Yeah, you're the body, you're meant to enjoy here. Yeah, just keep trying to enjoy. As soon as you go out the door, all the propaganda, oh, such a nice evening, what a wonderful place, my wife is speaking so sweetly to me, that's a joke. That everything is going on in this material world so nicely, everything is meant for my pleasure. But we try to enjoy it, but it becomes not the same sweet experience that the mind wants to get. So, but the influence is there. Material nature is always telling us, Bhupendraji, you're the enjoyer. You've got a nice car, you're cool, you've got a, you know, it's a good color, you've got a nice convertible hatchback, life is okay. Apart from that, the material world's giving you hell, but still, Maya makes me think, it's cool, it's okay. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's really good. But we don't get the message. But actually applying it means I have to know I'm Krishna's servant. So we apply it. We chant Hare Krishna and practice Krishna consciousness. And then we get the result that it's very sweet. And then we become convinced more and more. And as we do this, because in the beginning it's very difficult. How to understand this? This is a great science. How it happens? Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam. What is the, where is the verse in Bhagavad Gita?
10.10.
10.10, that's a good verse. Let's have a look at chapter 10.10, which is on page 519. Just after this point we were discussing, on page 10.9. Right, Dean Prabhu, can you read us this verse on page 518? Just the English, please.
The purport of it.
Just the verse.
Just the verse.
The thoughts of my pure devotees.
Yeah.
I'll start again, sorry. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell on me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me.
Okay, Tushar Prabhu, can you read the next verse for us, please?
Okay,
very good. And Mataji, if you could read the next verse.
To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining light of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance.
Mm-hmm. This is the point. This is how we make progress in Krishna consciousness. Krishna says, each as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. The more we sincerely try to approach Krishna, the more Krishna will give us the understanding how we can come to him, and the more Krishna destroys with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So at the moment we're in darkness. So the Vedic injunction is Tamasi Mar Jyotigama. Come out of the darkness and come into the light. Therefore the instructions are there to give us light, particularly Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavat Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, are meant to give us light so that we can understand the real position. That comes as a practical experience. If you're in the cave and someone tells you there is some light at the end of the tunnel, you think, well, this is very good, but I haven't seen it yet. So we practically advance in Krishna consciousness and the light starts to glimmer at the end of the tunnel. Oh, yeah, it's starting to make a little bit more sense now. Krishna gives us understanding. Bhupendra, last point.
If someone is practicing Krishna consciousness by just saying, because of the energy is so powerful, it's finding it difficult to control his senses and he's trying to practice Krishna consciousness, how could Krishna help him? What would it benefit him? How can he get, you know, because of the energy is powerful, he's finding it difficult to practice Krishna consciousness, how can he?
He gives the devotee the association of devotees where he can see that I'm not practicing very well and therefore I'm suffering. He sees the nice devotees practicing seriously and he sees that they're actually blissful and they're making progress. And he thinks, let me try to do what they do and practice better. And then I'll also become blissful. This is wanted. Krishna gives us that knowledge. He gives us that association. As we sincerely try to approach Krishna, Krishna gives us that opportunity. An understanding by which we can come to him. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. Mukesh Prabhu.
That's the last point.
Okay.
False ego.
Yeah.
Is that analogy where we put a glove over the hand, Is that represent false ego?
It represents the subtle body.
Yeah.
You've got one, just like you've got the body, and you have, we wear the dress over the clothes over the body, and then there's an overcoat, you know, so we've got the subtle body covering the soul and we've got the overcoat which is the gross body, yeah. Thick trench coat, not very subtle and easily maneuverable in one of those thick coats, so we've got this gross body which doesn't always perfectly execute the ideas of the mind, how we should be, so we've got the subtle body which is like a glove covering the soul. So the simple thing, why is the mind active? Because the soul is present. Why is the gross body active? Because the soul is present in his subtle body. When the soul is gone, when there's no more conscious living entity inside the gross body, that the thick outer glove is taken off, drops on the floor because there's no hand inside it to make it look like a hand anymore. You know the glove puppet? It works because there's a hand inside it pulling the strings. So this gross body is active because the soul covered by his subtle glove of the subtle body is inside. So even though we get rid of our gross covering, we've still got the subtle covering, and that's the part we really have to work on. Because yoga practice means controlling the mind and controlling the senses. We have to engage the gross body and we have to engage the subtle body. If I'm standing there offering arati to Krishna, and my mind's off in the Caribbean somewhere lying on the beach, this isn't yoga practice because I'm, in theory, I'm there, offering the arti, but my mind is someplace else. Yoga practice means to engage the mind with love, into the senses and the mind with love to Krishna. So we have to bring the mind under control. Not just the ritualistic activities of devotional service. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I wonder what's for supper. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. What's on the TV tonight? No. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Getting the mind to focus on the transcendental sound of Krishna's name. So the mind has to be engaged. Krishna is saying, engage your mind in always thinking of me. Become my devotee. The devotee with practical activities. Here we read, what are the symptoms of the devotee? Krishna is expressing here. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. The subtle body is working. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are surrendered to me. And thus they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always conversing with one another and enlightening one another about me. So they're experiencing, because actually they're fully engaged in devotional service. Not just superficially engaged, but actually fully engaged on the gross platform and on the subtle platform. Is that okay? Thank you all very, very much indeed. We've gone slightly over our time, but you've all been asking wonderful questions, and I thank you very much for that. So let's continue on next week. And next time, we might actually read the verse, the purport.
Might do it.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nitai gaura premanandi. Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pachari, Yavisesha Sambhavani Pasti Jani Shatara. Hare Krishna. But your questions are glorious. So very good. Thank you very much. Let's have a short kirtan. And then, if I'm not mistaken, Krishna Prabhu has organized some very nice prasadam. Very appropriate prasadam for himself. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Jai Prabhupada!
Thank you.
This one is, that's the temple.
Oh, sorry.
We're going to come and play for a minute. So much more I wanted to say, and not enough time to discuss.
I'm going to make a comment on a vote here.
I was going to discuss about that. Maybe while we're taking prasad, mention something about Sri Baladeva. Yeah. Hari Bol.